Live from Remington Park, Sirius XM at the races, back after this.
At the races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Santa come once, yeah, we all know. Don't use my chimney, got a key to my door. Oh. Oh, look what Santa did, messing with me. You call it Merry Christmas, I say Santa's messing with me.
We're back. Hour two at the races as we march toward year end next Friday. Going to go to Vegas and have Dave Hill join us. He's on his way back to New York after a Vegas sojourn. And I was guessing. I saw the WPT on your tag, so it was a poker venue.
Yeah, it's the World Poker Tour World Championship this week out here in Vegas. So I was out here
writing a little something about it.
Where's it going to turn up, Dave?
Probably it'll be at the WPT's website.
Oh,
which
wow.
People haven't checked out. It's pretty cool, yeah.
Oh, cool. What kind of an angle? Any particular or kind of a general piece?
It's a profile of a guy who might win the Players' Championship this year.
Interesting. All right. Well, as always, you're intrigued and fascinated by gamblers of all ilk.
That's right. Not just horse players. Anybody that makes their living by their wits is interesting to me.
Exactly. Well, you've been making a living on the National Football League with your wits this whole season. We're up to week 15, and boy, last week felt like there was a few you would have liked to have had back.
Yeah, you know, I ended up doing okay. I had a losing week. I think I went 6-7 on the week. It was kind of a short week. There were a lot of buys. But I'm not sure if the plays I gave you guys did that well. It was sort of weird. Like, the plays that I was nervous about did well, and then the ones that I felt more confident about whiffed. Wish I had that Buffalo game back. I feel like they should have covered that number, but hey, Sarah.
Well, and I'm just reaching for our games. You started nicely with the Thursday win with the Rams, the thriller, and Buffalo failed to cover. Detroit came through. Baltimore came through. Denver and you got. You're done now officially with the Buccaneers, right? The divorce is
yeah,
official.
I wrote that in the column today. I said I'm not picking them again. You can give me 20 points. I'm not going to pick them anymore. But it sounds like I gave you some good ones in last week.
I thought
I gave you some bad ones, but it sounds like we did all right there. I was happy about Detroit and Denver especially.
Yeah, you know what? You went 4-2 with us.
All right. Well, streak continues on at the races, Ben. Because I went 6-7 on the week.
And that leaves you for the year. Let's... for some reason, I'm having trouble pulling up the times, which is annoying. Boy, everything nothing is working here. Whenever you're on the road, there one or two things will invariably trip you up.
It's true.
Not easy.
I'm sitting here in the airport in Las Vegas this morning, so I know what you mean. I'm a little bit by the seat of my pants too.
Well, you know, by the way, how many Vegas, you've been to Vegas a few times this year?
I think four, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've been here quite a bit this year. One of those trips to Vegas was on the tail end of a family vacation, so it really doesn't count, although I had a good time out here with the kids, but it's a whole different experience coming out here with the family than coming out here by myself.
That's for sure. And, of course, you also were there for that blackjack ball.
The blackjack ball, yep. Yeah, and I was out here earlier in the year doing a couple of episodes of my podcast. I came out here to golf, and I came out here for the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's right.
I was here for the Super Bowl.
Wow. Holy cow. All right. Well, another visit, and you'll be filing Nevada taxes.
Yeah, well, they don't pay taxes here, I heard.
Is that right? Yeah.
That's why people live here.
Is there no way? Is there no state income tax in Nevada?
Yeah, Nevada doesn't have income tax.
How about that? Well, you're still, collectively, you're still 12 games over 500, and you're well over 500 for our audience. So you're
keep it going.
Yeah, you're a hero. And what are we going to do about postseason? Is postseason a separate record-keeping?
That's a good question. I don't know how they do that, but I am going to keep doing the picks through the Super Bowl, so probably keep it all in the record.
Well, we're at a point, you would think, with this stretch run toward playoffs, that you know, there's certain themes that seem to be repeating themselves, David, and that includes, you know, the injuries that are piling up, and particularly at pivotal, you know, at pivotal positions, and then the aftermath. And it's funny watching what the Ravens are going to deal with, watching what the Niners have done. It might be the most fascinating.
Yeah, you know, the quarterback position is really a mess right now with so many injuries. But across the board, yeah, this is the part of the season where injuries are just really taking their toll. Although the flip side of that is that sort of mid-season injuries for other kind of key, you know, positions, this is also the time of year where some of those guys start to come back out because the games start to matter so much more. So it's, you know, they're done resting them. It's time to play. But for a quarterback, yeah. And, you know, the Brock Purdy thing was really cool to see, but it's hard to know what's going on there, right? Is this, is Brock Purdy just that good? Or is this team so good that you or I could go out there and quarterback and run the Shanahan offense and win a game against, you know, it's hard to know. And I guess we'll find out more this week against in Seattle, where I think they'll have a bigger test.
Well, let's dive in, because the Niners tonight are in Seattle, and 3.5, it looks like, right now. Another one of your favorite things, home dogs.
Yeah.
I was going to warn you about the Giants game, but you you didn't want to listen.
Yeah, that was one of those coin flips that didn't go real for me. Yeah, tonight I like the home dog. I think 3.5, if it's still 3.5 this morning, I think 3.5 is too many points to give them here. You know, San Francisco definitely looked like world beaters last week, but, you know, we need to see more from Brock Purdy, I think, to know what his real value to the point spread should be. And I still think he's a significant downgrade from Garoppolo, even given that performance. And so this will be a tough test for them. You know, the 49ers last week, their defense was really who fired on all cylinders for them, and probably will again this week, but you kind of have to against the Seahawks. They put up lots of points. So I feel like this game should be close. I think it should be a pick. So I like taking the points at home with the Seahawks.
Well, and I see from your notes that Purdy actually himself is a little nicked up.
Yeah, he left the game with Kurt, and they actually did x-rays on him, but he came back out. So it's questionable whether he will even play, but I think, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting about Seattle is that their defense is starting to play better, you know, a little bit better. So that was the difference maker in a lot of games that they lost that they should have won earlier in the season. I like the Seahawks here. You know, if it turns out that we're wrong about Purdy and he's worth a lot more to the spread than I think, then we'll find that out this week and we can adjust for the next week. But right now, I feel like the smart move is to really not assess him based on one game.
Well, the Thursday night games have gotten better in recent weeks. After a steady diet of
the Broncos.
Yeah, the Broncos. Let's get into we've got the full complement of Saturday games, right? This week
there is a Saturday game. I think it's Buffalo and Miami. I'm staying away from that game. I picked in the paper Miami. I have not bet the game. I'm not sure that I will. I think the line was 7.5.
Yeah.
And it just feels I want to take those points with Miami, but I'm just nervous about it. I feel like that line is pretty right on where I think it should be between these two teams. So it's not one that I'm going to bet on, but if I had to bet it, I would take Miami in that game.
Just looking at the note, I was in attendance. I sent you a little video clip of SoFi Stadium, which was, I'm sure I understand that the Raiders Stadium as well in Vegas is very similar, but my mouth was just on the floor. I couldn't believe the whole spectacle that was going on there. But I'll tell you, Miami was so awful. It was scary how bad even scored the 14 points were a gift.
So it makes me nervous about actually playing on the game. You know, I don't want to overreact to 1 week. That's why I still think that the numbers say that Miami should be more, you know, having a touchdown and a hook should be enough points for Miami, you know, to cover here, according to the numbers. But what makes me nervous is just that sort of knowing that eerie feeling I have watching that game that something's wrong, you know. But you know, we shouldn't, like I said a couple times now, you know, we shouldn't overreact, you know, and by the numbers, it should be Miami. But I think the good, you know, unfortunately, I have to pick every game, but you and your listeners don't. So this is one I'd stay away from.
All right. So far, we're still sticking with, but the Seattle, the game tonight, is that a prime pick?
Yeah, I think there's real value in Seattle tonight.
All right, good.
I also think there's real value in Minnesota hosting the Colts. Minnesota's laying 4. I've been pretty down on this team this season, but and they definitely got embarrassed by the Lions. But I mean, the Colts are as bad as it gets right now in the NFL. You know, they're playing the worst football in the league, you know, I just don't see them. I don't see how they improve on what they've been doing the last few weeks. So I think this is a good spot for Minnesota, and they're only laying 4 points. At least they were only laying 4 yesterday. So that's a good number. I think there's real value there. Unless there's something I'm missing or some sort of injury situation with Minnesota, I think that they should be able to cover this.
Well, and we should revisit what we talked about last week, which was that, you know, the Detroit, you know, giving points to the Vikings and the hubbub that it caused when the line came out. And it was obvious in the first quarter that the line was savvy.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, a lot of people were, you know, really, myself included, I guess, were really gloating about that because, you know, Detroit and Minnesota, I think, are pretty similar teams. You know, I think they're both pretty average, solidly average teams. And so it made sense to me that Detroit was laying points there, and Detroit came ready to play. I mean, they're one of my favorite teams, my favorite stories this point in the season. I think we're all rooting for the Lions. It's been exciting to watch them kind of get it together after really floundering, especially on defense, earlier in the season. So that was a cool game to watch, and I was glad to see Detroit get it. But I think Minnesota, I think they bounce back this week against the Colts, and I think they cover 4 easy.
The Minnesota game is 1:00 on Saturday. The 4:00 game is Ravens Browns, and then the night game, as mentioned, Miami going into Buffalo, where I think I read they're expecting more weather. I guess. Well, you talk about the Lions, and here's a situation where they go to New York or to Jersey to face the somewhat reeling Jets.
Yeah, and Detroit's getting a point here, and I like Detroit getting a point, but I got to say, I think that, again, that's pretty right on. I think this game should be about a pick. I like getting a point, but I just think this is another one where it's just a really even contest. I wouldn't be surprised if either of these teams winning this game, because I think they match up pretty well. But I do like Detroit. I like the way they're playing. And I don't necessarily love the way that the Jets have been playing, especially on defense. I feel like they've taken a step back on defense a little bit. So I do like Detroit in that game. But it's one, like I said, that I wouldn't be surprised either way.
All right, so we're not including it in our picks of the week?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's real value in that one. I do think that there's some value in Houston, who I did not take last week, despite getting a gift of 17 points,
yep,
the biggest point spread of the season, and
yep,
I decided to go with the Cowboys, even though that's one of those games where by the numbers, you know, my numbers showed that Houston should cover, and I just could not pull the trigger on it because I just felt like, you know, they were messing around at quarterback, testing some things out, and, you know, and just Dallas just looked so strong in that fourth quarter where they put up all those points. So I ended up going with Dallas, and I lived to regret it because I knew on, you know, my numbers had Houston covering and I didn't trust them. So this week I'm going to trust them and maybe I'll regret it again. But they're getting two touchdowns against Kansas City. And I think that what we saw from Kansas City last week, you know, they messed around. They scored the first 26 or 28 points of the game unanswered. And then they, in the second half, let Denver catch back up and backdoor cover. I mean, three interceptions helped, you know, which was really uncharacteristic. And I don't think you can count on that happening every week. But let's look at what Houston did against Dallas. They damn near beat them. I mean, Dallas needed a last minute, you know, a last minute drive to win that game after laying 19 points. So, you know, I say we don't, you know, we don't discount Houston so fast that they're not going to be able to stay within two touchdowns here. They're at home. It's a big number. So I think there's value there.
All right. So Texans plus 14. All right. Early game, 1 o'clock game on Sunday.
Yeah. And I like the Titans here visiting the Chargers there at SoFi. I think that the Titans were getting 2.5 points, and I think there's value there. I think the Titans, as much as they've been, you know, inconsistent this season, to say the least, this is a game where I think they match up well, and that Chargers have a real difficult time stopping the run, and that's what Tennessee does best, right? So if there ever was a spot for Tennessee to really make a statement and come out and shake whatever, you know, shake the cobwebs off, I think this is a good spot for that. They can run through this team, and I think we'll see Derrick Henry get a lot of carries, and they could really dominate. They could play Titan ball, the kind of real physical football that they're best at, and so I like getting points here with the Titans.
I got to ask you about the Sunday night game. The Giants and Commanders, the hookup again after that thrilling 2020 tie.
I think it's going to be one of the most fun games to watch this week.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's a lot on the line for that game, for both teams. I think that they, both teams really have a lot to prove here. And I think we're going to see some really good football. The Giants are getting points there. They're getting 4.5 points tonight. I like that. I think that's I like the Giants in that spot, but I think it's pretty close. It's one where I think, just like I said with the Jets game, I wouldn't be surprised to see it go either way. I like the Giants.
Is this a prime? Is this an inclusion, or are we treading lightly?
I would tread lightly on that one.
All right,
but I'll tell you. The other game that I think there's a lot of value in is Monday night, the Rams getting 7 points against the Packers. And it was really fun to watch the Rams cover last week, with Baker Mayfield. I think everybody had a lot of fun watching that kind of fourth quarter come from behind. And everybody's happy. Everybody's on board for the Baker Mayfield, comeback story here. And I don't think it stops. I think it may continue this week, given, you know, they're playing Green Bay and Lambeau. That's a tough place to play. But they're getting 7 points. And I think it was a real confidence builder for them to bring this guy in with less than 48 hours and have him be able to control the offense without even knowing the playbook. I think that probably built a lot of confidence with the team in him. And, now the guy's had a few days to learn the playbook, take some snaps in practice, and think he could only improve on that performance. Now, you know, they're playing a little bit of a tougher team in theory, but Green Bay has not been playing the way Green Bay should be playing this year. I like taking the points with the Rams there. I think that's a good number. I think that game should be closer than 7 points.
You just said something that made me think of just a little sidebar. And that is the off-season machinations and the carrying on that went on with Rodgers and with Brady. And here they are, both miserable and with those sour pusses, the two of them. I could eat it up with a spoon, to be honest. There's all these other fun stories about other quarterbacks, whether it's these late season replacements, even Colt McCoy the other day, there's so it feels to me, isn't it time to kind of move on to the next to the next gen already?
I will give Brady credit that last week, I don't know if you saw the clip, but all the guys that intercepted him all asked him to sign the balls that they intercepted, and he graciously did it, which is a new look for Tom Brady to to be a good sport in defeat. But he, somebody asked me last night who I thought the most overrated quarterbacks were in the NFL, and I said it's Rodgers and Brady. Which is a little bit of a cheap answer because they're also the oldest quarterbacks. So, of course, they're going to be overrated. We're still thinking of them as them in their prime and not them as older, And Russell Wilson goes in that category too, right? Russell Wilson's clearly a quarterback who thought that he could still scramble and still play the way that he did, a few years back. And, these quarterbacks, they as they age, their bodies age a lot faster. This is a real difficult physical sport. It's hard on these guys' bodies, and the things you can do your first few years you can't do in your last few, and you gotta kind of change your game. I agree with you. I think that Brady may play another season. People think there's a lot of chatter about him going to the Niners or him playing another season. I kind of hope he doesn't, because I do think that there's so many exciting quarterbacks that could take that spot. And as much as I think Brady brings a lot to a team in terms of experience, he showed last week that he's pretty uncoachable. When he sent the field goal unit off the field when Coach Bowles sent him on the field and Brady sent him back. I mean, as a head coach, I think you probably hate having to deal with, something like that at the quarterback position. So I think he could be a real value added to a lot of teams. I'm not sure that the 49ers are one of those teams that need him. But that's where he'd probably want to go if he stayed another year. This is Jalen Hurts' league now. He's really the incredible story at the quarterback position this year. Him and Justin Fields, obviously. Justin Fields is is doing all the things that we had hoped Lamar Jackson would do this year. Putting up Hall of Fame type numbers on his feet. I think there's a bright future for Justin Fields and the Bears going forward, but these older quarterbacks are not the same. Lamar Jackson, I think, is an interesting one to talk about here because this was a big year for him. He went into this with no contract and was going to earn his contract this year, and I'd say that he did do that. I mean, he's had a hell of a year. Of course, he's hurt right now, which is really the downside to taking that kind of risk. But Lamar Jackson and Justin Fields, are that other type of quarterback that can run and, present a different opportunity for football teams than what Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers always have provided.
Well, I'm certainly delighted to hear you include and feature Jalen Hurts for those that followed the last couple of days, the Micah Parsons yammering that sports writers and TV talking heads tried to turn into something, which the Eagles immediately just shut down and just completely shrugged at, which kind of tells you. I mean, to watch what's going on, as long as I've been an Eagles fan, Dave, I mean, to have this kind of focus this hurts. That video, did you see that video clip from the other day when the wide receiver core, when they were yucking it up on the sidelines, on the bench, and Hurts was, he looked like he was meditating. He wanted nothing to do with the he's a different kind of a guy, and The other part of this is how there was discussion all offseason about, well, this is a real moratorium, a real referendum on whether the Eagles will go forward with Jalen Hurts. I mean, if you couldn't tell that this was a not just a talent, you know, he's a coach's son. I mean, there's everything about him is just kind of unique.
The player he reminds me the most of is Kobe Bryant, right?
Perfect.
Who also was a coach's son and who was just dialed in like that, had a real reputation for not being down for, you know, hijinks and well, I guess what most people say about Kobe is he didn't have much of a sense of humor, right? But he's just an intense, focused, you know, very serious player in it, and it was for his entire life from the time he was a little kid. And so I think that's the player that most makes me think about Hurts. I think Hurts is going to be dangerous, man. And the wide receivers that catch balls for him love him, you know. They yeah. feel like he makes them look great. I mean, that's what you want, right? The wide receivers that play for him don't feel like they have to make him look great by catching these uncatchable passes, but that he's just hitting them right between the numbers. And I think the Eagles have a bright future.
Well, it's such an unusual position for an Eagles fan to be in, to have a team like this. This is even different from 17, you know, where it was actually right about now, like when Wentz got hurt, and I actually had total faith and confidence in Foles. Johnny D will attest to this, that I was unperturbed about Wentz going down. It was a blip on the screen, but this is different. This is, this is really exciting for, and I'm trying to temper the enthusiasm. It's funny. I was probably more enthusiastic in 17 at this point. Here, I'm trying to pace myself.
Yeah, we all should knock on wood here, right? Because one of the things we've learned, and this is how we kind of started this conversation, is that, I mean, Kyler Murray went out of the game last week without even being touched by another player. And, it's just every week is fraught, you know, and it puts these teams in a tough spot where do we rest these guys? How do we call plays that aren't going to put them in harm's way? And the Eagles is one of these teams where like, okay, we've got a great quarterback, but who do we have to back him up if he gets hurt? This is one of the more interesting things about the NFL, I think, is that there is such a big gap between starting quarterbacks and backups, which seems unusual, right? Given that this is the most important position in the game, you'd think that there would be more parity among teams between their sort of QB1 and QB2. But, you know, the market forces had a lot to do with that and how much it costs to have, you know, how much it costs to bring in a really talented quarterback and how many teams need them. But that just puts teams in a tough spot because when QB1 goes down, it just really has such a dramatic impact to a team.
Well, we are getting we're getting down to the short strokes. We got the big holiday games, new Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve games, and I'll actually be off, Dave, between Christmas and New Year's, so we'll be able to do next week. We won't be able to do the New Year's games, but we'll certainly, you know, send out the links to the column. You got these five games: Seattle, Minnesota, Houston, Tennessee, and Rams. You're happy with those?
I am. I am. I think that's where the most value is. I will be rooting for the Lions, even if I don't bet on them. I'm going to be rooting for the Lions. And I'm going to be rooting for the Cincinnati Bengals because I just want the Buccaneers to lose the rest of the games this season. So,
out of spite.
Out of spite, yeah. Just for being on the wrong side. I'm done picking them. I picked the Bengals. I'll tell your listeners, my numbers say that the Bucs should cover that number. But in the New York Times, the paper of record, I picked the Bengals. So I'm just letting your listeners know I'm a man of my word. I went against the model. I don't care. I'm just taking. I'm fading the Bucks the rest of the year.
That's funny. Well, this could backfire readily. You realize, right? I mean, this has got every potential
It almost certainly will backfire. So that's why your listeners may want to fade me on this particular emotional pick. But that's what I'm doing. I'm rooting for the Bengals now. This week, I'd probably root for them anyway. I really think that team's exciting. I think they have legitimate Super Bowl aspirations at this point. It's kind of fun to watch them gel here at the end of the season. So I might have rooted for them anyway, but I'm going to root for every team against the Bucks for the remainder of the season.
Well, the Bengals are a popular with our audience, given the Kentucky. So much Kentucky listenership.
Mm-hmm.
Bengals are a popular. Yep. Although, you know, I hadn't really thought about this, but I guess the Titans, you know, Nashville, I guess there's certain segments probably of Kentucky that, you know, shopped for a team and adopted the Oilers when they came to town, I suppose, with the Titans.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in Arkansas, and we, you know, everybody were Cowboy fans until the Titans came around, and now I think there's a considerable number of Titans fans in Arkansas.
Well, there you go, because you're adjacent, right? That's right. That's a good point.
Tennessee's a long state.
Exactly, right? And in Knoxville, they probably root for the Panthers.
Yeah.
and in Chattanooga for the Falcons.
Yeah, I think Tennessee. It touches everything there, so.
That's got to be the toughest television market in the country for how they break
up
the state. That's funny. There's a there's a website I should mention. I forget who. I don't know if Johnny. Maybe it was Johnny that gave it to me. Are you familiar with 506 Sports?
No.
It provides you with the television maps each week of where games are broadcast, of what markets are getting what games.
Uh-huh.
It's just great, and especially you know when I'm traveling like this week. I mean, the Eagle game was on in L.A. actually on Sunday, which was great. So I didn't have to go schlep at 10 a.m. to some sports bar, you know, and eat terrible Eggs Benedict.
Well, I watch Red Zone like a sicko, so I've gotten to where that's the only way I can watch on Sundays. It's like my brain is used to the channel flipping for me,
yeah.
The sort of like flipping back and forth, but it does feel sometimes when I get to watch the primetime games and watch a full game start to finish. I wonder why I don't do that every Sunday. I have to watch Red Zone like a real sicko.
Well, because you got action going, and then there's the selections, so you're tracking your success. When you are watching an individual, featured game, it's a lot of fun because you tweet. There's the live tweet show at Dave Hill 77 that is very funny. Your ongoing one-liners.
I'm glad somebody appreciates it. Sometimes I feel like I'm losing followers when I'm live tweeting during football games. I have a very strange Twitter following. Not everybody that follows me cares about football, So it's a. I had to try to respect everybody and not overdo it. But sometimes I can't help myself. It's my only way to vent my frustration is to pick up the phone and tweet through it.
Exactly. And it's very funny. Because I invariably, I know which side you picked and which side you're on. So, watching you get disgusted with certain decisions is pretty entertaining.
Yeah, you and 9.5 million people, I guess.
Dave Hill, everybody. Dave Hill 77, of course, on Twitter. In the New York Times, the NFL weekly analysis, and Dave has been continues on the plus side for the listenership. So Seattle plus 3.5 tonight. Minnesota giving 4. Houston getting 14. Tennessee getting 3. The Rams getting 7. Dave, safe travels home. We'll talk next week ahead of Christmas.
All right. Good luck, everybody.
Dave Hill, folks. So much fun. He's unbelievably entertaining. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to talk to Pat McKenna in about 15 minutes. And so we'll get the, you know what? Well, I'll slip. Let's get just a half. We'll get a little half segment in with Tony because, of course, he was with us on Monday as we pay tribute to JJ. So I want to get a little bit of follow-up as well from Tony. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I almost forgot. Your timing is beautiful. I just left the doctor's office, and he tapped my shoulder, where he put a plate in it. He tapped it, and he injected it. But I feel like a horse that I could really run fast right now. He took about 4 cc's of fluid out of it, and then he injected it with cortisone. So I'm really doing good now. My shoulder ain't even bothering me.
Well, Tony, actually, you say that, and I mean, it's not like, is that just from normal wear and tear? Because it's not like you're exercising out there in the mornings. I mean, is that the one where you broke the socket, where you broke the ball joint?
Yeah, I got a plate and about 10 screws that go down from my shoulder down to my arm, and the plate is all right, and all the screws are in place, and the appliance hasn't moved at all. But he says, with time, you develop a little arthritis, and you busted so many bones, you're going to have arthritis in some other places, too. He's put 3 plates in me, a bunch of pins that he took to put in me when I broke feet and ankles and stuff like that, and he pulled them out. But I got 3 plates he left in me, one in my collarbone, one in my right arm, and one in my shoulder down the top of my right arm from my shoulder. Right, that's arthritis. So then he injected the bone on bone with cortisone. He drained the cyst that's developed there, and he injected that with cortisone. And he says, you might have an operation in your future. So he's happy with the way things are going. He's operated on me a bunch of times. He says, I helped him build a new office.
You helped him build an office. the Tony Black... The Tony Black Wing.
Yeah, that's what they should name it. And he says, come on down, keep coming back. You know, we'll see how long this cortisone lasts in the shoulder and see if the cyst comes back. But the next DOB will remove the cyst surgically, and then we might have to do a shoulder replacement. But I told him, I said, whatever he does, I'm keeping all the hardware after he takes it out for my collection of hardware.
Unbelievable. You're obviously it's different for you now, but there's really only Perry Utes that's out there even close to your age. I mean, I can't even count. You can't even count really Mike Smith. I mean, Smith's what, 15, 16 years younger than you.
Yeah, I think, what is he, in his 50s, 56, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm 71, and I'm going back out there one more time.
It's so ridiculous, but I believe you. There's no stopping you, Tony. We just a couple of minutes this morning, because I did want to get back to you, and after we paid tribute to JJ, so many nice things, and I'm sure you've heard from a million people.
I certainly have. And I'll never forget when I left JJ. I said, I love you, JJ. And his next words to me was, see you on the other side. And then I said, they tell me jocks don't make it to the other side. That's what a few gamblers have told me. If jocks don't make it to the other side, he says, I'll see you to the other side. it was so nice that Sam, his wife, called me to tell me, because JJ didn't want anybody to know what was going on. And I saw him on Thursday, and then he passed away a couple days later. So I was so glad I could see him, reminisce. We talked about some of the horses and some of the claims of foul against me, and the one claim about a game line. He says, you rode Reliable Jeff and won a stake on him at Garden State. He said, and your claim of foul, I asked you if he was all right. He said, sure, we're all right. He said, you went to the phone, and you told the steward it would have taken a real skinny horse to get through that hole on the fence, and he wasn't on a skinny horse. And the JJ said, I never forgot what you told the steward. He wasn't on a skinny horse. And they left the number up.
No, did you I'm sure, how much, I don't know how much time you've spent online since Monday, but there really was a very nice outpouring. I mentioned John DeSilva wrote a beautiful thing about Joe and on Facebook, and a lot of people responded to you. I put up the picture from Delaware of you and JJ.
I love the picture.
Yeah.
I love the picture. I want to thank you. I must say, thank you so much. I took that picture and made a picture of it in my phone, and it just reminded me so much that was JJ. That was me, but that was JJ. I love that picture that you posted. I'm going to save that and remember him for more things than just that picture, but I'll always look at that picture and say, that was JJ.
No.
That was my man.
Tony, I did want to come back to you this week and get a little follow-up. Next week, we'll do our big Christmas kind of wrap-up and send everybody off to the holidays.
Yeah, it's a great holiday, and it's great for family, and I wish you sure wish everybody a great, happy, healthy holiday. And if I ride this one more race, I just want to tell any of them jockeys behind me, if you see a little opening on the fence, don't go there unless you're on a real skinny.
The one and only Tony Black. Tony, thanks. I'll talk to you next week.
Love you there, Steve. You take care. Keep up the good work. I appreciate all you do. Take care, Steve.
Too kind. Tony Black, folks. I just wanted to get kind of a little follow. How could you? I mean, it's amazing. For those that don't remember this, because Tony was still riding regularly when it happened. He took a spill and fractured the ball, the actual that's not the ball joint. What do they call it? The end of the bone, you know, the round knob that you know your shoulder pops in. He fractured that, and I just. You know, Rich Migliori this week. When we talked to Rich Tuesday. I mean, we think about, you know, we read about, and, you know, particularly NFL. I mean, NFL, not just NFL either, NHL too. There's plenty of concussions in the NHL. But, you know, the aftermath of a riding career, and then there's as fraught as the prime of a career is, you know, then subsequently, you know, the pain, you know, pain control and the like, it's when you sign on, you've signed on for life, I guess, right? You know, to still, you know, at the age of 71, to be going to get having that stuff, and he's ready to go out there for more. That's the best part, right? He's ready to go do more of it, and get another win. It's amazing. Tony Black, he's the greatest. Pat McKenna is going to join us from NYRA, and if you did not get a chance to, you know, to read some of the. You know, the coverage of the New York initiative, essentially. And we've talked to Pat as the We Are New York Racing Coalition got going. Now it feels like the full-fledged campaign to get Albany to get on board and throw their support behind the Belmont renovation. Pat McKenna, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Coming to you from Oklahoma.
How is Oklahoma?
The wind is whistling across the plain, as they say. yeah, where the wind it's chilly, but I'm happy to be here.
Good. I've not spent any time in Oklahoma.
You know, it's funny you say that because it occurred to me as I was going down in the elevator this morning. I said to myself, I'm going to be here three nights, and Tina and I were in Tulsa. We were in Tulsa for one night on Route 66. So I thought to myself, let's see, I'm going to have spent four nights you know, out of 365 this calendar year. And then it occurred to me to do a tally of where, you know, where I was all through the year, and how many nights in Louisiana, how many nights in Arkansas. It might be interesting. The distribution of my calendar this year, where I was all year long.
Gotcha.
It might not be interesting to everybody, clearly. But I am curious, actually, what percentage of time do I spend in New York when on an average year? I'm very curious about this now.
What's your guess?
I would say 60. I would say mid 60s. I'd say 2/3, basically 1/3 away. Maybe even a little bit more than 1/3. I'd say 40, maybe close to 40% away. I'm going to say 38% away, 62% home.
I may not have left the state of New York since March of 2020.
That's not even over to Manchester to the outlet shops.
No. So, I'm trying to. Yeah, I mean, it was obviously the COVID, the yeah. onset of COVID in the yeah. spring of 2020, and then, yeah, I mean, my son Finn was born, so the timeline of little kids and work, yeah, I mean, I'm having a hard. I'm struggling to come up with. I spent a little time in New Jersey.
Ah, okay.
The tri-state area. I haven't left the tri-state area in too long to admit. Well, I guess I just admitted it.
But, well, you know, you also gave us an interesting tidbit there. You didn't want to name your son something Irish?
I've heard this before. We may have discussed it.
No, I don't know. Not with me. Not with me. Somebody else must have taken that shot.
Yeah.
That's great, actually. That Finn is great. I love it.
Thanks.
What's the daughter's name?
Abigail.
Abigail. Okay, so she got that right. So you didn't want to want to call her, you know, Siobhan or what are those other Irish names, right?
Well, let's get to Belmont Park.
Let's do it. I was inundated. Saw all kinds of coverage of the. We can call it what it is. It's an information campaign and an awareness trying to rally support.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an advocacy campaign, without a doubt. And you know, the We Are New York Horse Racing Coalition has really gained a ton of momentum in the last 3 months. Let's say ever since September, when we relaunched the coalition to focus almost exclusively on building a new Belmont Park, on persuading New Yorkers, decision makers in Albany, right on up to the governor, that this is a project that will deepen the sport's economic impact, that will generate billions in economic activity and thousands of jobs. So what you saw yesterday was validation to that claim. It should surprise no one that a $400 plus million construction project means jobs and economic opportunity on Long Island and throughout the region. But what we saw with the release of this comprehensive and rigorous analysis from HRNA advisors, they're the go-to firm that does this kind of analysis if you're building a skyscraper in Manhattan or, you know, a football stadium in New Jersey, in our case, a brand new racetrack in Nassau County. And what they found was just that, a billion in one-time economic impact by way of a massive construction project and a deepening of Belmont's ability to drive the local economy for decades to come. When you think about a year-round facility that will be an attraction 7 days a week, whether or not there's live racing there or not, it makes all the sense in the world. And sometimes that gets a little bit lost. It's hard to talk about all of the details of a transformational project like this at the same time, but a variety of restaurants and attractions that will be destinations for the region day to day, and hopefully the country during some of the bigger events. So it's exciting. You know, we also announced the membership of the Long Island Association, which is the most, you know, the most impactful Long Island-wide Chamber of Commerce of sorts, as well as the Long Island Builders Institute. Again, a group that makes all the sense in the world. So, you know, it's about continuing to be aggressive in the way that we're presenting the project to Albany and throughout the state, because, you know, this would be one of the most significant capital projects on Long Island in New York State in this coming year. So we're certainly not going to be shy about it now and over the course of the next weeks.
A couple of things, Pat, and one of the elements that and I actually mentioned this even in advance of knowing you were joining us, the construction impact is one thing. I mean, jobs and the continuity and all those, you know, the trickle down, the infrastructure. You know, the thing that is probably, you know, even more important long term is the opportunity, particularly to get the Breeders' Cup back in the rotation. That's got to be a priority.
Yep, and the Breeders' Cup, you know, we received a letter, a firm commitment from the Breeders' Cup, not to just return once we're successful in building a new Belmont Park, but to, you know, obviously put us in the rotation of regular stops to host the Breeders' Cup. You know, this is, again, it's a $100 million event over the course of that week. In New York, that number might even be somewhat low. New York is always going to be, you know, an international destination. But to have the Breeders' Cup, the way that the Breeders' Cup has grown and changed into the kind of event it is today compared to 20 years ago, there's no place better than Belmont Park. And right now, you know, we get this question mid-late October, it seems like every year. Belmont's just not an appropriate venue to host an event in early November, considering the fact that the building is not weatherized, it's not winterized, and there just aren't the kinds of amenities that would justify the Breeders' Cup returning until we can update the facility, modernize the facility. So there's that. And then the other piece of this that you know, we have been transparent about is that we hope to consolidate racing to one venue. That venue should be Belmont Park. We love Aqueduct. We appreciate Aqueduct. But to operate two facilities 8 miles away from one another does not make sense from a business perspective. And, you know, in order to sustain thoroughbred racing in New York, that is hugely important for the future. So to be able to consolidate to Belmont Park would only, again, it would improve the entire ecosystem, as well as providing back to New York State. Remember, Aqueduct, this property is owned by New York State. NARA leases the land. We operate as part of the franchise agreement. But for New York State, this is one of the biggest opportunities anywhere to develop a piece of property that conservatively, without any actual development, is a billion-dollar parcel of land located adjacent to JFK Airport. The sky is the limit for them. And again, this is value back to New York State taxpayers. Just like Belmont Park, we are looking to modernize, renovate, and reimagine what is ultimately a New York State asset. So no taxpayer dollars on the line. In fact, taxpayers probably end up winning out if we're able to be successful. So we're optimistic. You know, you saw the governor's office respond in the story to say that they are supportive of projects that will create jobs and economic development. That should come as no surprise, but we will continue to make the case as aggressively and consistently as we can. You'll see, you know, a significant advertising campaign here in the coming weeks in advance of the budget process. So we're leaving no stone unturned, because this is the number one priority for NYRA and by extension for thoroughbred racing in New York State.
Pat, layout, and I'm glad you referenced the financing. This is not a stadium project like you get in some municipalities. You know where where a city gets a gun in their ribs. These are bonds that that'll be paid back over 30 years.
NAIRA is responsible for all of the debt service obligations. Exactly. These would come out of the VLT revenues that we receive on a monthly basis. So that money is guaranteed through, through the life of the franchise and moving forward, the next franchise. Should NAIRA cease to exist, for example, and the franchise goes elsewhere, then that money would still be flowing to whoever takes the mantle. Because remember, NAIRA does not, the reason why we need access to the New York State bonds is because if we were to go to a bank, we don't maintain assets. We have no real property. This is New York State property where we operate. So the funding would be prohibitively expensive. So that's why, just like building a dormitory on a college campus, for example, to go access more affordable bond rates is really important for the financing of the project.
Explain the mechanics and the timing, Pat. And obviously the tunnel, the tunneling for infield access and the underpinnings for the mechanical needs that, that using the infield will create, that part is already being done.
The tunnel is on schedule. They've done a tremendous job. It should be basically, wrapped up in the coming weeks, and they'll start putting the racetracks back together in advance of the 2023 Belmont Park spring summer meet. So that project proceeded right on schedule, according to plan, that will allow for us to return to Belmont in May of 2023. Recently opened the new Tapeta Pony Track, which is a pretty significant addition, allowing Glenn and his team to work with that product day to day in all seasons in anticipation of potentially adding a fourth synthetic surface to the two turf and main track configuration that we have today. So we will run the 2023 Belmont Spring Summer Meet at Belmont Park. And immediately thereafter, Glenn and his team internally, the folks at NAIRA, will get to work on reconstructing, taking up the two turf courses and main track and putting, beginning that project, renovate those surfaces in the same way. Remember that we renovated the services here at Aqueduct and at Saratoga, put down a limestone base on the main track, get those turf courses in a position where they should be with completely overhauled drainage, and the rest of it. So, no matter what happens with the authorization to access bonds to build a new building, that those elements are moving forward and moving forward on schedule.
What is the timing of the of the financing and lay out a perspective, potential timing timeline?
Yep, we hope to be included in the governor's executive budget proposal, which should be delivered at the end of January. From there, the budget process unfolds with both the Senate and the Assembly providing their budget priorities, negotiations over the course of February, March, and then a budget would get passed in April. And again, we're optimistic that the budget process provides us the most efficient pathway to get this done. So we could have news in April. Should we not be successful in the budget process, then we would, approach it through the end of the legislative session. But we firmly believe, as do the now many supporters of this project, not just trade associations, not just racing interests, but when we talk about both statewide business groups like the New York State Business Council, local chambers of commerce, and as importantly, if not more importantly, local elected officials. You know, everyone in and around this region, in the New York State Senate and the New York State Assembly, including incoming members, recognize the importance of this project to the future of Long Island and to the New York State economy. So we will continue making the case. We appreciate the broad and deep support. And as you saw in the polling that we released back in September, October, New Yorkers, by and large, understand and agree that it's well past time to build a new Belmont Park.
If everything, Pat, if everything fell into place, if all the dominoes fell right, what could people foresee as a project end date?
All things being equal, probably it's a 2 to 3 year, probably a 3 year process. You know, you're looking at 2025, potentially 2026,
okay,
before everything is complete, without any, you know, external disruptions. So, yeah, we, you know, once we get moving, it sounds like a long time, but, you know, I remember when UBS Arena, when that arena was viewed as a pipe dream, and here we are into the second year of UBS Arena.
That's a good point.
And it feels, you know, these are big and complex projects, especially for us since we're a year-round circuit, but we'll make the adjustments that are necessary to support horsemen and provide the best possible betting product we can, even during this period of transition.
Is there anything that stakeholders, horse players, fans can do to support this on our end?
That's a good question. No, I mean, you know, I think we're in a good place where we are now in terms of communicating with elected officials, presenting the facts of this. You saw that yesterday through this economic impact analysis. You know, we appreciate the support of everyone out there who's playing in our product day in, day out, who stays with us throughout the winter here at Aqueduct. That goes for the horsemen, that goes for the horse players. You know, and this is, you know, the loyalty that our fans showed in Ira is extraordinary, and we appreciate it.
Well, we'll continue to touch base and get updates and provide everybody with where things stand as it progresses. Kind of get the sense, and you could tell by some of the reaction comments, you know, that everybody expects this to, you know, follow through and happen. It feels like it has to happen, Pat, right? I mean, we have to make it happen.
We hope so. Yep. I mean, that's the sense of urgency that we're applying to everything we do within this effort. That's what you're seeing with the support of the coalition. The advocacy not only from us and inside of Thoroughbred Racing, but really all across the state. You know, and what's good for Belmont is good for Saratoga. What's good for NYRA is good for Saratoga and the downstate economy. So we're on it. We're going to stay on it, and we're going to put the pedal to the metal here for as long as it takes.
Nice. It's probably our last conversation before the holiday break. Any year end thoughts and well wishes?
No, you said it. I mean, happy holidays to everyone, all your listeners, to you, Steve. You do a remarkable job, you know, day in, day out, all year long. You know, it's hard not to think back fondly of the Belmont Stakes, the return of fans in big numbers for the first time since the onset of the pandemic last spring. That was a special day. And then the Saratoga meet was, I think, without equal, at least in my experience. It was just so exciting. And to be a part of it is something that no one at NIRA ever takes for granted. So, yeah, you know, we're already thinking about spring, summer. But, you know, again, thanks to you. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to the horse players.
Pat McKenna, everybody. PC McKenna, the New York Racing Association. And did I see the big logo reveal?
I don't think quite yet for the Belmont Stakes.
Yeah.
I don't think quite yet.
I heard a rumbling. I heard a rumor.
Okay.
All right. It's coming. It's coming soon. It's always a big day.
Can you see the Palazzo Riggi is back on the market?
No.
Yes.
Palazzo.
Saw that in the Times Union this morning, that the previously announced buyer has backed out of the deal. So it's back on the market, Steve.
Hmm. Well, I'm gonna sit this out. Pat,
have a good day.
I appreciate it. Always great, Pat McKenna. Everybody,
anytime.
Thanks, buddy. The new Belmont will be. It's going to be so different. It'll be. Forever, you know, there's so many of us that only know, right? I mean, really all three tracks. It'll be it'll undoubtedly take some adjusting, right? But it's going to happen. It'll be, you know, it'll be the future. When you think about it, it really was crazy that to have Aqueduct and Belmont, you know, where they are. It's not like back in the turn of the century when you had, you know, you had the Westchester Jockey Club and as we mentioned with Mig the other day, that's going to be a fun series that Mig and Ernie are doing. About the New York area racetracks, you know, all of them. But I mean, to have those two, you know, these two big racetracks. I mean, with in the proximity, I never asked John Nehrud, you know, when they did the 60s, you know, the early 60s and the later 60s, the two renovations of Aqueduct and Belmont. You know, was there a discussion at that time about potentially consolidating? I'd be curious. It's interesting. I mean, there's not many people left, really, that probably were in those, We're in those discussions. So, thanks to Pat, though, and this project inching forward. We're inching forward, too. We're into hour three. Rich Eng. We'll get a Rich Eng visit in this morning. I think we may have one or two trainers. Still trying to get them over. Ahead of the springboard on Saturday. Take a break. Come back after this at the races, live at Remington.